طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح، طفلة تمتطي قوس.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, where each week you will hear the Palestinian narrative, the Palestinian perspective, the Palestinian voice, exploring the realities of the Israeli occupation of the Palestinian homeland. You will not hear this narrative very often in the Western media, which is why it is important that it is presented each week on This Week in Palestine. This Week in Palestine was created by Sharif Pham and is continued in his memory. This is your host, John Roberts. This morning we feature the wonderful talk given by Suad Amiri at Tufts University. Suad is a Palestinian architect, writer, author, and as you will soon discover, a marvelous storyteller. Her presentation at Tufts takes up all our time this morning, so we will get right to it with our thanks to Steve Lowe, who helped produce our show this morning.
Well, thanks, Tom. That was an incredible introduction. I always, find it extremely kind to list all of these things that I did and did not do. But thanks for all the organizers. Having an organization, an NGO myself, I know how much work it takes to have someone stand just right here. So I thank you for all the work you have done, and I thank all the organization that Tom has mentioned without me repeating them again. And I thank the audience for coming in such a bad weather. But also thank you, Tom, for inviting me to speak. Where are the books? You took them away from me. I need something to work. Yeah, you know, my publisher always said you have to have a book in your hand when you speak so people end up buying the book. I'm always very, very, very happy actually to talk about Murad. Normally we ask people, what is the book that you read and influenced you? And I always say, what is the book that I have written myself and has influenced me? And actually, Murad is the book that influenced me in such a way that it changed my life. And I will share with you how and what I mean by it changed my life. But like my mother, I used to, you know, this book, Sharon and My Mother-in-Law, I'm sure most of you know this book. And it reminds me of a question I used to pose to my mother. I would ask, Mom, we are four. She has like three daughters and one son. And I always felt that she liked the eldest sister and my brother because he was a boy. And I was the youngest in the family. So I would say, Mom, which one of us you love most? And she would look at me and say, never ask a mom which kid. I love you all the same. She would stop a little bit and then she would look at me and say, but it was your eldest sister, Arwa, who made me a mom. So this book is the book that really made me a writer. So it does have a special position in my life. It changed my life. In a way that I have always been an architect. Actually, I studied architecture. I always have a theory why I became an architect that I will share with you. I always say that I have a Palestinian father from Jaffa, and I have a Syrian mother from Damascus. And those of you who have been to Damascus know what a great city it is and how it leaves impact on your brains. All these little LAs and Alan, who is from Damascus, will share with me, you know, the markets in Damascus, the hammam in Damascus, the palace, all the mansions in which the Damascene families lived in are so beautiful. that it is difficult not to leave an influence on you. So I always say I became an architect because of those little alleys that I walked as a little kid with my mom or with my aunts. But I also have a father who came from Jaffa, who became a refugee, like 90% of the people who were living what had become Israel now, became a refugee, and we went to Jordan, and I grew up in Jordan as a refugee, and I always imagined my father's city, Jaffa, my father's house in Jaffa. My father used to say, I put the towel on my shoulder, and I will be walking from the house, going dipping in the sea. And as a little girl, I always had this image of my dad sitting in his house, seeing the sea. So between, I always say, between the absence of Jaffa as a city, the absence of Palestine as a country, I always had to make models, as it were, of how Palestine looked like, how my grandfather's house with the courtyard, with the lemon tree, it was obvious it wasn't as beautiful as my mother's house in Damascus, but I always lived in the presence of Damascus and in the absence of Jaffa. And between these two, I thought that I became an architect. And I love this story. I made it up, but actually the reality of if you want to really know why I became an architect, it's because I am dyslexic. As most artists and most architects, if you make a survey, I don't know if anybody has made a survey, but most of us artists and architects, we go to that field because of our dyslexia. So what I want to tell you is the last thing I thought in my whole life is to become a writer. I mean, I thought of becoming a lawyer. My mom said the judge would be tired of you talking and you were gonna win all the cases. I love nature, I love animals, I grew up with lots of animals. My mother was an animal lover, so we almost had a little zoo at home. So I thought of becoming, a naturalist or a biologist, but never in my life I became a writer. So thanks to Sharon, who invaded my city in 2002, Ramallah, and thanks to my mother-in-law, who was 91 years old, who came to live with me under curfew for 42 days. And I always say to the Israelis, we may forgive you for what you did, all the atrocities you did for the Palestinians, but one thing I shall never forgive you for having my mother-in-law 42 days with me in the same house that felt like 42 years, actually. And this is how I ended up. This book is one story about my mother-in-law, what she did with me when she was with me, and what the Israelis did to my city. So this book, as we say in Arabic, بيجي مع العميان طبنجة. It's just like you could have a success by pure accident, and this is a pure accident success. But after that, I became a writer, and my publisher in Italy, at least, he says, Saad, we want another book from you. So I ended up actually writing 4 books or 5 books, and I want to share with you a little bit about the writing. When this book became a success, there were emails, actually. I never intended to write a book. So I was writing emails, sending them to friends and say, don't share. And next thing I know, they are with a publisher. So this writing process had no author and no reader in it. And I think because of that, it is very spontaneous, it's very honest, it's very open. And maybe that's why people like it. After that, I decided to write another book, and purposely, by the way, now we are talking about writing, purposely I wanted to write something very, very, very different from Sharon and my mother-in-law. The reason for that, I wanted to prove to myself that I am a writer, because if I continue writing the same style, then I am stuck. But it wasn't a good decision, because the second book I wrote was called Menopausal Palestine, or it has another title, it's called No Sex in the City. And that city is Ramallah, where I live in. It has no hormones, believe me. It has a city with no hormones, we call it. But anyway, actually that, no sex in the city or... menopausal Palestine was political. It was about the time when Hamas won the elections. I come from a very secular family, and I was very disheartened by the fact that a religious group won the elections. And I wanted to write about the woman of my generation, because there has been a lot of stereotyping in the Arab world, in the Muslim world, in Europe, in America, about who we are as Arabs, as women. And I thought the only way, the indirect way of answering this is interviewing my women friends who were mostly activists, political activists, social activists. And it's a series, actually, it's the, if you want, I was surprised you described me as a feminist, but that is my feminist contribution. Now, after that came Murad. And actually, Murad started as a book. It happened at a time when the Israelis were starting to build the wall, the separation wall, the apartheid wall, between Palestine and Palestine, because actually they built it on our land on both sides. It's not between Palestine and Israel. But also because it's such an absurd, it adds one more absurdity in the occupation of Palestine. And the reason I say that it is an absurd and it's a brutal act, really it does not, the wall does not make sense. And the reason I say is the following. The Israelis claim that this wall is a security wall. What does it do? It supposedly separates the Palestinians or the Arabs from the Israelis or the Jews. But if you look at the wall itself, you will find out that on our side of the wall, of the West Bank, I wouldn't say Gaza because now it's a different story in Gaza. On our side of the wall, there are 500,000 Israeli settlers living on our side. And on the other side of the wall, you have almost 1.5 million Arabs in Israel. What is the number? 1 million? 2 million? I am very bad with numbers. But then you also have the Arabs from Jerusalem, who are also around 200,000 to 300,000. So you have 2 million Arabs on the this side, and you have 500,000 Israeli on this side. So how did this wall separate the Palestinians from the Israelis? It's really not clear to me. Not only that, this wall really destroyed so much of nature. And I was all, and cultural heritage, archaeological sites, and there is the nature part of me. I was very saddened, thinking of what would animals do. You know, in, for example, in Palestine, Israel, or historic Palestine, we have a lot of deers. What were these deers running all of a sudden one day they find there is a wall in front of them? What were the snakes feeling about this wall? What were the turtles? Then I decided I want to write a book from an animal point of view, because I was very concerned about the nature. And by the way, building this wall, the Israelis uprooted almost 12%, 500,000 olive trees. They were just uprooted and thrown, but they were taken also to the Israeli market to be sold. So this is what I was thinking. I want to write a book about the wall, but from the animal point of view. I did a lot of research trying to understand how deers see things, how snakes or turtles, but then I realized, you know, it's not going to be an easy job for me to write the whole book. So I ended up writing one chapter. For those of you who read the book, there is one chapter in which all the animals that lived with me as a kid, like the two sukkar and Reem, my two gazelles, Mickey, my dog, the cat, my the Sambo, the cat, the rabbits, all the animals we used to have. Also the monkey, we had the monkey Sasha. I brought them together to react to this wall. And the rest, actually, what happened is Murad appeared in my life. Now, the book in Arabic is called Murad Murad. In English, it's called Nothing to Lose But Your Life, because they felt that Murad Murad does not attract. But anyway, I was sitting at home, and Murad came to help me with the garden. And Murad is a Palestinian worker. He was 21 years old at the time when he came. And I knew him because I know his family. His brother works with me in an office boy in our organization. But I noticed that, like in the Arab world, when somebody's working in the garden, you go in, you give them biscuits, you come back with the tea, you take the coffee. I mean, you have to feed them and pamper them all the time. And they hardly do much work. But I noticed, actually, with Murad, it was interesting. I used to take the coffee, the food, and put it next to Murad, and Murad is just working. 2-3 hours later, I come out and I say, Murad, for God's sake, you haven't touched any of the food or the coffee or nothing that I gave you. And he looks at me and he says, don't you know my middle name or my nickname? Because I know his family, so he thought that I knew everything about him. I said, no, Murad, I don't know what is your nickname. And he says, my name is Bulldozer. And I said, Bulldozer, what does that mean? He said, I don't stop working. I start at 8, I finish at 5, and that's when I eat. Really, having Murad that day in my garden, I felt as if there were 5 workers in helping me. He was incredible. Eventually, he finished the work, and he had his coffee, he was eating, and I was talking to him. He had his hand wrapped. It was injured. So I asked him, Murad, what happened to you? Well, he said, I was working for this bloody Israeli and, I was knocking his room, and then there was a dog. I told him to take the dog away and he wouldn't take the dog away. So I hit the dog. And, all of a sudden there is a fight in which Murad gets. Murad, by the way, is short, very thin. And he is thug, really. Unlike his brother Muhammad, who works with me, Muhammad is very sort of delicate. But this guy is just like, I'm out there to face this world. So he started, I got intrigued, totally intrigued by the character. Really, I loved him. It's just like, then I said, Murad, tell me, are you working in Israel? By that time, the Israelis have built the wall and they have forbid Palestinians from working in Israel. Around 150,000 Palestinians were working in Israel. And one night, Sharon decided he doesn't want to have Palestinian workers anymore. So one third of the Palestinian population woke up one day without a job. And Murad and Muhammad have 8 brothers and their father, and they all lost the job. And the only one who continued going back to Israel and working was Murad. So I told him, but what about the wall? He told me, the wall, you know what? How high is the wall? So I said, 8 meter. It's like a concrete, 8 meter. He says, you know what, Saad? Even if they build the wall, which is 18 meters, I can make it there. So how do you make it? He said, I make it. So he told me, I jump, I go from here, I go from there, I jump. He told me, you know what? Sometimes this jeep, the Israeli jeeps, they hold me and they bring me back in the West Bank. And on the way they say, listen, we'll let you go and work today if you tell us how do you make it here. So the stories he told me, it's like we start at 5, we start at 2 in the morning. He started telling me a story, and here I am, living in Ramallah, supposedly political, read the newspaper, follow on everything, and I had no clue whatsoever what the Palestinian workers are going through. I had no clue. I mean, as if he came from Mars to to tell me, you know, like, this is what's happening to the Palestinian workers. No newspaper, even the Palestinian newspapers, nobody tells us anything about these workers. So I was totally intrigued, and the idea of accompanying Murad was sort of cooking in my head, as we say in Arabic. So I told him, Murad, I'd like to come with you one day. And he looks at me, Doctora, are you mad by any chance? I said, no, really, I would like to come with you. He said, it's going to be difficult. It's very impossible. And you know what? Sometimes they shoot at us. When he told me shoot at us, I said, okay, end of the story. He said, you know, the other day I was running and they shot my friend right in front of me. So, okay, end of story. Then I said, when do you normally go? He says, Saturday. On Saturdays we go because of Shabbat. At night we start. So anyway, he left. And I couldn't sleep that night thinking of Murad, of the Palestinian workers, what they're going through. Next Saturday came. I talked to Muhammad, his brother. I said, Muhammad, I want to tell you something. I have been talking to Murad, your brother, and I would like to go with the workers to Israel, to sneak with the workers into Israel. Would you come with me? I felt like I needed someone to be with me in case, you know, I get scared. I needed support. Muhammad said, yeah, of course, I'll come. Not only that, I will bring my camera. And Muhammad, you know, is like, he has nothing to do with Israel. He has been working in the West Bank for all his life. So okay. Next Saturday passed, I was thinking, I was reading the newspaper and I read about the killing of one Palestinian worker. And I decide, no, I can't. It's too scary. Eventually, one Saturday, Salim, my husband, was not home. He was traveling. And I did not share it actually with anybody because I knew if I would share it with one person, I'm not going to do it because they're going to scare me. So Salim was gone. I opened his cupboard and, you know, I picked up all his clothes and I picked up, a hat. I tied my hair, put it under a hat and put a cascade. And I wore like sort of manly things. And, you know, my boots, my tennis shoes, everything, and my eyeglasses, everything that made me look like a man. And immediately I called Muhammad. Actually, it was 11:30 at night. Muhammad says, what is it? I said, Muhammad, come immediately. Muhammad understood. He came. We got in the car, and we drove from Ramallah. It was 11:30 at night. We drove from Ramallah to his village, Mazra' al-Sharqiyya, which is almost like half hour. And we arrived to his family. I know the father, the mother, you know, and they all sleep in one big hall with mattresses. They have already spread the mattresses around. And the father was sitting there watching, sitting on the floor, watching a television about the loss of Andalus, you know, lamenting the days when the Arabs were in Andalusia. And, so anyway, the mom came and she told me, is it true what Murad is telling me? I said, yes. She said, Doctora, are you crazy? You can't make it. You have no idea what this. And then said, I will try it. If not, I'll come back. While she ran into the kitchen with her daughters, with everybody, they prepared the dinner for me. And then a phone call from Maher. Maher is one of the brothers who is in Israel, working in Israel. Actually, he's sleeping there and he doesn't commute at all. Brother Maher is calling and saying, Saad, I want to beg you not to do it. You have no idea how difficult it's going to be, and this Muhammad is irresponsible, Murad is irresponsible. And eventually I said, okay. And then I said, Muhammad, I don't want to talk to anybody. That's it, you know. So it was time to sleep for 2 hours, from midnight to 2 o'clock. And 2 o'clock, they woke up. Not that I slept, but they woke us up. And there is a bus, what we call the Ford Transit, that comes to the village and picks the workers up. And there were 24 workers from that village. So I and Muhammad and Murad got on the bus. And there was Abdullah, the driver. And when Abdullah sees me, he looks at me, he says, we seem to have new workers today. So anyway, I go and sit at the end of the bus, and slowly, more workers started coming. And with every worker, it's like, what's happening here? What's happening here? You know, they're commenting and they're getting excited. And, you know, it's just like, what is this woman doing with us exactly? And somebody's jokingly say, is she an Israeli security officer? Is she a collaborator? Is she a journalist? Eventually, they decided that I was a journalist from Al Jazeera. And that actually was the best thing, because they started telling me their stories. And you have to figure out, we went from this village around 2:30, and we are supposedly to drive around 1 hour to go from Ramallah area into Nablus area, into a village, a little village called Zawiye. And that is the area, the village, in which Murad has figured out, actually, there is a bit of the wall which is not a wall, it is... help me.
Cap?
There is no, they're like a slack shaiki. Wires, you know, like these barbed wires. He has figured out in miles and miles and miles, Murad has figured out, and the workers, not only him. So anyway, in the bus, I sit there, and I was really getting scared, but slowly I was being entertained. Because here is Murad telling me that he has a lover on the other side. It's like, what? Yeah, you don't know, I have a lover. And where is your lover? In Tahtikva, you're going to meet her today. And then the other kids is like, a lover, don't listen to him. She's a sharmuta, you know, she's like a prostitute. It's like, oh my God. You know what I mean? And, you know, the other one is like, he thinks she loves him, but actually he's stupid because he's just spending his money on her. And, you know, just the plot thickens slowly, but I become more and more curious about it, you know. And then I started talking to these kids. How long have you been working? It's like, Murad started working in Israel when he was 14 years old. And he is 21, so one-third of his life is there. So here I am. They tell me about how difficult it is working in Israel and what it means. Sometimes they work because they are illegal workers, as far as the Israelis are concerned. Sometimes they don't pay them. Some of the employees don't pay them money, so they cannot go and report to the police. Some people, you know, most of them paid them very little. So of course, most of the time they get picked up and thrown back, or picked up or put in prison. So here I am sitting there and listening to until we reach to Azawiye. And the driver stops on the side, and it was a moonless night. You couldn't see anything. And then I said, Murad, where are we going? He said, we are starting to walk now. Walk where? I came. You know, there were like 24 of them, and I am the last one always. And we started walking in the fields, the olive fields. I don't know how many of you have made it to Palestine, but it is terraces. You know, it's just like 1 meter terrace, and then another terrace. So here I am, you know, thinking that I am very sportive, you know. It's just like, with Muhammad's help, we're walking in the at night, walking, dip, 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 and they're jumping, and all you can hear really is just their chick. And my heart is going boom, 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 boom. And, you know, it's still dark. And slowly, the sun starts coming up. And as the sun starts coming up, I find out that actually I was in the midst of not only 24 workers, maybe 500 workers. From all other villages, you know, it's like ghosts. You were walking between the ghosts. You can imagine how an olive tree looks like at night. Mm-hmm. And then how all these silhouettes of workers coming from different parts of the mountain. In a way, I felt safer, to tell you the truth. It's just like, as we say, الموت مع الجماعة رحمة, as we say in Arabic. So as we were walking, all of a sudden, I hear Murad cursing. I should not. I am a respectful professor at a college. I should not share with you what kind of curses. But Murad was like, "Oh my God, Murad, what is it? Why are you cursing? Why are you cursing?" He says, "Stop." And when Murad says stops, everybody stops. Murad, what is it? And he says, "Look in the horizon." Like we're all looking in the horizon. Do you see that blue light? Neon light in the distance? It's like, yes. You know what that is? He's like a fox, you know? You know what that is? It's like, no. This is the computer in an Israeli jeep. There are two jeeps waiting for us on the other side. So, okay. My heart, of course, and they all sit. What are we going to do? He said, we have to wait. Maybe they don't see us, maybe they go away. So we're sitting under the trees, waiting for these jeeps to go. They don't go. And of course, the sun is coming, and now they can see us all. 300 ghosts had become 500 human beings standing right in front of them. So all of the workers, I got more curiosity from other villages coming. Is like, what is this woman doing? She's from Al Jazeera, let me tell you, telling me more stories. And there was one story that, I loved most. I really loved that. Abu Yusuf, I can see Tom walking. No, we're okay.
You're fine.
Yeah. One of the workers who was, these kids are all between 18 and 22, 24 maximum. There was one guy called Abu Yusuf who was 42. And for them, 42 was like the, Abul Hol or, like somebody who has lived 300 years. They saw Abu Yusuf like the old man amongst them, and they were making fun of Abu Yusuf all the time. So I got curious, but also Abu Yusuf was slow like me, so I stuck to Abu Yusuf all the time. And then I told them, they were making fun of him. It's like, you have 11 kids, and some of the Palestinian workers are. Abu Yusuf at one point says, if the Israelis don't go away, I am going to go back, and I have a permit to work in a settlement on the West Bank. So I was telling him, but Abu Yusuf, you want to go and work in a settlement? You have a permit to work on the settlement? And he says, yeah, that I have 11 kids and I have to feed them. And if I don't make it to Israel today to work in Israel, I'm going to go back to the settlement. I'm not going back to face my wife and kids without money. So I get intrigued by him. And then I said, Abu Yusuf, tell me, how does it feel to work on an Israeli settlement, for a Palestinian to work on an Israeli settlement? And then he looks at me, he says, Doctora, you live in Ramallah, and you have a job in Ramallah, and you have a salary at the end of the month. You don't need to go to work in Israel, and you don't need to work in a settlement. But if you were like me, you see your kids being hungry, you can work with the devil. So I said, listen, really, Abu Yusuf, I am not trying to blame you or judge you. I am just trying to understand what it means. How does it feel? And he tells me, you want to know how it feels? I said, yes. He said, okay, I tell you how it feels. When it is like a bad day, I say, these bloody Israelis will continue to occupy us for the rest of our lives. They will take more and more land, build more and more houses on our land. And that's when I tell Hani, my assistant, the laborer, Hani, why don't you put less cement in the mixture today? But some days when I am feeling okay, and I say no occupation ever lasted forever, we're going to be like South Africa, and we are going to be like Vietnam. And, you know, he had, like, all the revolutions listed up in his brains. I say, you know, Palestine will be no different. We're going to be liberated like all other nations. You know what, Hani? Put more cement on those settlement houses, because they're going to become ours. This is how it feels, he says. So anyway, listening to many of the stories, eventually the Israeli soldiers in front of us don't leave. So Murad says, get up, let's go. I thought, go, I was ready to go home. I've had it, you know. And then he says, let's just go in their direction. I said, Murad, where? He said, let's go in their direction, towards them. Because what happens, we are standing here in a mountain, there is a highway here, and the Israelis are standing on the opposite mountain. So I said, but I don't understand, what do you mean? He said, just follow me. Of course we followed them. He jumped, we jumped, and all the other workers started jumping, and we see the Israelis coming out of their jeeps with their rifles, and Murad looks at us and he says, listen guys, we are 500, let's just run. They're not going to be able, they are 8. They can catch 8 of us and the rest will make it. I said, oh my goodness, what kind of calculation is that? And the first thing you start thinking, maybe you're going to be one of the 8 that they're going to. So he said, okay, one thing I'm going to do, there is an underground, a abbara? Like a water tunnel under the street. You know how the roads, they have like tunnels where you can walk in them. He said, plan A is we go under the tunnel in these and they won't see us. Plan B, we come back and we go in their direction. Okay, we started running and there is like a ditch next to the street and we are all running and I am running after them. I'm all like gazelles and I am like next thing I know, like Murad and his friend, I hear him say, don't shoot, and they go like this and I just go and run back. I have no idea what happened behind me. Sure enough, you just hear people, of course they pass you. We go back. What happened? He said there were 2 soldiers actually waiting on that. And they arrested 2 of the people. We came back. And Murad says, plan B, let's just go. And sure enough, we came down, jumped over the into the highway towards the Israeli soldiers. And they started shooting in the sky. And he says, just keep going. Keep going. And it's just like boom, 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 boom. And sure, the Israelis managed to grab, I don't know how many. And we made it up. But I just like collapsed. My heart couldn't take it anymore. I told them, you know, Mat Murad, that's it for me. You go ahead. And he says, okay, we'll leave you. We'll leave Muhammad with you. And that's why Muhammad was there in the first place. So I go up and sit. We sit under a tree. And I said, that's it. You know, it's just like, so good. So far, so good. We'll come back in the evening whenever the Israeli soldiers. And you could see these workers just going like gazelles on the top of the mountains. And we were sitting, taking a break with Muhammad and I alone. And they said, Muhammad, you have some food? Let's have a picnic. What can I do? So we started eating. And next thing we know, that Moz Murad and his friends are coming back at us. So there were another Israeli checkpoint, another hurdle. They came back. We were waiting. Anyway, eventually, that other checkpoint was there. We did the same thing. Eventually, we reached to the point where we are to cross it. You know, like this, there is a wire in which they have made a slit in it, and they, you know, some of them opened it, and there was a hole. And Murad says, just run. One after the other, one after the other. And we have made it from the West Bank into the other side, into Israel. And after that, it was quiet. Quiet, quiet. No harassment whatsoever. Peacefully walking. And I was thinking, all this harassment they did actually was in the West Bank, not in Israel.
Yeah.
And here, the minute we arrived to Israel, there is no harassment whatsoever. I mean, it was like weird. Then I tell Murad, what's next? He said, now, you know, we walked, we get to Kfar Qasim. This is an Arab village. We have coffee. We have, we take a break. And then now we are going to arrive to a place called Tahtikva. Tahtikva is the first Israeli settlement in historic Palestine, 1882, I think. And by the way, all these young people were saying, we're going to Mlabbes, Mlabbes, Mlabbes. And I was telling, what is Mlabbes? I was asking these kids. They say, you don't know Mlabbes? I said, no, I don't know Mlabbes. They said, Mlabbes is the name of the Arab village that was destroyed, and that's where the lands of these villages has become now part of Tahtikva. Okay. Don't despair. We're going to get there. I can see some of you despairing, not arriving to where we want to arrive. We're going to arrive in 5 minutes. Yeah, they're getting tired also. So the last saga of our trip is I ask Murad, how do we get to Tahtikva or Mlabbes? He says, we take the bus. I say, take the bus with the Israelis. We have been running from the Israelis all these hours, and now we take the bus with the Israelis. He tells me it's a settlement bus, you know, it picks up the settlers. I said, I don't need to ask much questions. So anyway, it's a bus. It's not a settler's bus, but it's a bus. So we were standing. By that time, by the way, just to tell you, the 24 of us, the 24 workers from that little village, we had become four. The 20 have been arrested by the Israelis. Either went back, arrested, you don't know, because you're just running for your life and you have no idea who got shot, who got arrested, who got what, who went back, we have no idea. So when we were standing at the bus, there were four of us, Muhammad, Murad, and Riyad's name, Riyad with us. So I said, what do we do now? He says, we get on the bus. I said, okay, we get on the bus. Sure enough, the bus came. Now, before the bus came, I was standing talking to Muhammad, and we were five with Abu Yusuf, and so the three of them disappeared. So I wasn't paying attention. I looked around, I said, where is Murad? Where is Riyad? Where is Abu Yusuf? And there was a little park behind us, and they were hiding there. I said, maybe it's human, you know, it's just like, okay. I looked back, all of a sudden the three of them had appeared. I could hardly recognize them. I wish I had things. You know, all of them have taken their trousers and made them into shorts like this, you know. They have taken this. They looked so yuppies, you know. They made themselves look like Israelis. Some of them tied his hair like this. The other one had a ring in his ear. Every Palestinian worker was trying very hard to look Israeli. They had sandals, they had shorts, they had, you know, earrings, all sort of things. I said, Muhammad, the only people who look Arabs is you and me now. And Murad and Abu Yusuf, each one had their trick to look Israeli. Okay. So the bus came. Murad was the beginning, you know, the beginning. He stops the bus. He goes up. They follow. The three follow. And I was the last one. And I hear Murad goes, go back. It's like I step back from the bus, I go away, and all the passengers are looking at us. They're speaking in Hebrew. Murad and Abu Yusuf and Hani, they're all speaking Hebrew with the soldier, but I have no, with the driver. I had no idea what they're. Murad comes back, is like, fuck. Like, Murad, what happened? It's like he asked me for a permit. Now, he's illegal. He doesn't have a permit. So he told them, I am a Palestinian from Kfar Qasim, you know, because there are Arabs in Israel. So they all claim to be Arabs. He says, show me your ID. He said, I forgot my ID. He said, get out. So they wouldn't allow us on the bus. So I said, what do we do now, Murad? He says, we wait for another bus. We wait for another bus. But he said, but you know what? This time you're going to be number one getting on the bus. I said, okay. So the bus comes again. And here, first me, then Muhammad, then Murad, then the rest. I go in, it's like with a British accent. It's like, 5 tickets, please. And I hand him my 50 shekels because I have no idea how much 5 people cost there. It's like 200 shekels. I have no idea. Discuss these details. Huh? This is how they know you are a terrorist. You don't know how much the bus costs, you know? So I give him lots of money. It's just like, okay, he takes. I could see he was like, what's happening here? But anyway, he gave me the 5 tickets, and it was the biggest victory in my life. It was like I walked in with the 5s, just like, come, I look, and the bus is full. Bus is full. So I looked there. There was one spot there next to a soldier. I said, okay, next to a soldier. I go there. I sit, and the rifle is just like next to my legs, right there. And then Muhammad settles in front, and Murad actually settles next to an Israeli soldier, woman soldier, and Murad and Hani and Abu Yusuf are standing there, you know? And I was so scared, you know? All of a sudden, I felt like, this soldier sitting next to me, what am I going to speak? What language am I going to speak? This is supposed to be very close to Jaffa, where my family is from. And then, you know, just all of a sudden it all dawned on me. And I started feeling very sad, actually left alone, tired. And then, you know, I was feeling so strange in this place that supposedly is home. And I wanted to say something to Muhammad, but then I said, what language would I speak on this bus? Like, if I called on Muhammad, his name is Muhammad, on an Israeli bus, and I'm going to speak, because there is no other language I could speak to Muhammad except Arabic. I don't speak Hebrew, he doesn't speak Hebrew. And all of a sudden, as if the occupation of Palestine, the expulsion of all the people, everything at that moment became very stressful for me. I felt a big stranger, you know, it's just like, I can't take it anymore. And all of a sudden, I hear Murad. You know, Murad is sitting, I hear Murad standing up, Saad, Wainak? It's like, I mean, you know, he's speaking in Arabic. Murad standing in the middle of an Israeli bus and speaking in Arabic. It's like, where are you, Saad? It's like, my God, and all the people on the bus are looking at Murad. And Murad is like, Saad, I want to explain to you something. Bil Arabi, ismai, Saad, bid awal shi ki hal ishi, tala'i min hon. It's like, oh my God. And all the Israelis are looking at Murad. It's like, you see that empty land? Is like, yes, I see the empty land. It's like, these fuckers, the Israelis, they just knocked all the olive trees, and the Israelis are all looking at him. You know? It's like, what? It's like, al-arsat, you know. They have bulldozed all the olive trees, you know, like my brother Murad and I and Muhammad, I don't know, he was counting his brothers. This is where we built a house. This is where we used to live under the trees. And, you know, they bulldozed all the orange trees and took all the houses, so we cannot sleep here anymore. But this is where it is. It's like, okay. And, you know, all of a sudden it dawned on me. It's like, here I am, you know, being so scared to speak Arabic, feeling so depressed. And here is Murad, feeling completely at home. Completely at home. Speaking Arabic, speaking Hebrew, And he was shifting between Arabic and Hebrew with me, with the people on the bus. And people started, you know, asking him, where do you work? And all of a sudden I said, my God, you know, like Israel for me is almost a it's virtual. Because I live in the West Bank. Or you are a Palestinian living in America, or in Jordan, or in Lebanon. Really, Israel is virtual. But for Murad, it was home. It was home, but a strange home, even though he is a third-class citizen, you know. He had to look for a job. Sleep, I asked him, where do you sleep? He says, we sleep in, you know, the construction sites. But then I asked him, eventually, you know, we got out of the bus. I went to see where he was supposedly standing to find a job. Sure enough, I walked with him to the area. It's called the workers' market. He stood there, and in half hour, some Israelis came and picked them up, the three of them, in a car, and off they went. And here I stood, you know, looking around. Muhammad and I were totally lost, not knowing where we are, what do we stand, where Jaffa is, supposedly not far from there. And I felt how strange that place was. Really, there was nothing in that place that looked familiar to me. And the only thing that gave me hope was these workers. Thank you very much.
Unfortunately, that is all the time we have this morning. You have been listening to Palestinian architect and prolific author Suad Amiri speaking at Tufts University. Thank you for listening to This Week in Palestine, a weekly feature of Truth and Justice Radio. You will find us here at 90.3 FM every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. You can also stream us live on your computer at WZBC.org. We thank you for your time, and we hope you will join us again next Sunday and every Sunday to hear voices from Palestine. And this is John Roberts wishing you a good morning.